Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. We're going to talk arts, music, and culture today. My guest is Rob Hinkle. While attending MICA, the Maryland Institute College of Art, Rob started out playing bass for a performer, Audrey Morris, now Sense of Wonder, and then was drawn into a performance music art communication project called I Love You and I Miss You, comprised of Rob, Will Schaff, Clifford Rowley, and Karen Wagner. Upon graduating in December 1997 with degrees in illustration and performance art, I Love You and I Miss You went their separate ways, but as Rob was quarter of the band, he kept one-fourth of the letters and the word Iliamy. Went on to be his first illustration company and then the umbrella under which all of his forms of expression were released. He worked various day jobs, a bookseller, a high school teacher, a security guard, a public programmer on the stage of Maryland Science Center, a button maker and a button counter, and freelanced as an illustrator while developing a musical style through various bands. Over the years, there was Common Thread, Power Trio Strength in Hare, that's H-A-R-E, reggae act Red Zion, with writer Andrew Luttrell, Camara's Bridge with fellow singer-songwriters Audrey Morris and Syl Smith, and cover band Area 51, eventually culminating in the current incarnation of Iliamy. When he met Heather Lloyd in the summer of 2001, the plan, the dream, coalesced to quit the whole day job scene and not bother waiting for labels or managers. By September 2nd, 2003, they had quit their day jobs, let the leases run out of their houses, moved into a Saturn, and out onto the open road. And after 5 years of almost constant travel, Rob and Heather settled down to own beds again and have an actual mailing address. Over the years of travel, an important part of both the professional and social side of music has always been the open mic scene. Iliamy hits one almost every night thereof, and when in 2008 Iliamy got a little more sedentary, one of Rob's first missions was to create an open mic scene from what he'd learned from all across the country. Since then, Rob has been the creator and host of a number of open mic nights in the Washington, Baltimore area, some award-winning, all loved. He's even spoken at the Library of Congress on the subject of open mics and their effect on American music, the coffee house scene, and counterculture. His open mics have been selected to represent National Open Mic Night by Shore Incorporated and declared one of the best of DC by DCMusicDownload.com. When not playing music, touring, or hosting his open mics, Rob works selling sitars, repairing guitars, and tuning hammered dulcimers. You tune them, don't like them too much, at the Eclectic House of Music Traditions, and continues to do freelance illustration, graphic design, and sound engineering, including recording and mixing of all of Iliamy's most recent live release, Another Live, as well as Sudanese singer-songwriter Masno's 2014 release, Novella. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio there, Rob.
Sorry, I should write that a little shorter, I think, maybe.
No, that's okay. That's all the time we have, so.
Farewell. It was nice to meet you. Yeah. I write that all out in one big chunk and never realize how long it takes to read.
I read it a few times and I thought, well, maybe I'll just cut this down. And it all works.
Okay, good.
So tell us a little bit about yourself after that.
After that, man. Well, it's interesting to hear that all encapsulated like that. Certainly my life is revolving a lot around the band Iliamy right now. But I think the way I came to your attention, at least, was through the open mic community stuff.
Right.
The thing I'm doing at T-Volve every Monday. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of fans that are or a couple people that are regulars there who have come out and mentioned your radio station. They're fans of your programming. And thought that I'd be a good person for you to get to know. Or actually, I think they worded that vice versa. You'd be a good person for me to get to know.
It doesn't matter. I'm open to everything. But let's go back farther. Let's go back to where did you grow up and that kind of stuff.
I grew up in PG County, so not too far away from here.
You're a local boy.
Yeah, exactly. I fell into the desegregation program of the magnet system there in PG County. Martin O'Malley was looking for good causes, I guess, and big
things.
I found one with, the school system at least did. And I fell into this golden period where he was really supporting some magnificent magnet programs. And I went to a really excellent arts and college preparatory school, Suitland Center for the Arts, University High School. And that prepped me right into the art school scene, which really warped my brain. But the brain warping, I think, is required to fit into your sort of warped world that we got around us.
What was more of your predilection? Was it more art or was it more music initially?
It was definitely art. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I was halfway through Micah that I picked up a guitar. Initially, I was a painter, a photographer, sculptor, ran afoul of various altercations with different programming heads, and that would shift me into another program. But I graduated from MICO with an illustration degree, actually, photographic assisted illustration, and do a lot of work, actually our current album covers and a lot of posters and album covers for other local acts. Are my very layered oil acrylic scratch work paintings. Mm-hmm. And so I keep that going. And the visual side was always the instigator of all my creative mm-hmm. exploits, I guess. But as I got into it, I sort of realized a lot of visual artists at least sort of put their piece out there and sort of expect that to do their speaking for them. And then they go hide behind the gallery wall and lament the fact that they haven't been gotten yet in their time. And as I discovered music, first through performance art and then through actual, I picked up a guitar and realized that you could get in front of a person eye to eye and sort of communicate with them. I found that to be a very, very powerful media of communication. And that slowly drew me towards the music side of things and then the communities that music generates.
When you graduated from MICA, Maryland Institute College of Art, for mm-hmm. our international listeners,
with
there,
or without a comma, depending on what year you graduated.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember that, yes. Were you more focused on the art since you did take 4 years of art and you just picked up the guitar recently, or were you thinking that maybe it'd be a combination thereof?
I was really enamored with music by that point. I must admit that when I was just getting into the high school scene, my parents were lamenting the fact that I had chosen the arts magnet as opposed to the tech magnet. Mm-hmm. And so when I got into that a little bit further and I chose an actual art school, they sort of lamented that a little bit further. And then when I was halfway through an art college and said, oh, by the way, I've discovered guitar and I was thinking about being a musician, my parents were definitely not pleased. It's worked out since then, and they've been very proud ever since, but it took some time. When I graduated from MICA, I was almost entirely disillusioned by the visual art scene, certainly the fine art scene. Mm-hmm. I had discovered commercial art and commercial design and things that really focused on external communication, whereas often... And this is going to be a generalization that could totally make a lot of people angry, but this is my opinion. And I know that it's my opinion. Whereas a lot of the fine arts side of things, and frankly, a lot of singer-songwriter things, tends to focus a lot more on solving your own internal issues and maybe not actually communicating with the people that are next to you.
Right. So then what did you do when you first got out of MICA?
When I first got out of MICA, thinking, oh, you know what? I would like to explore the world of music for a little while and definitely put down my paintbrushes. I was approached by my old high school, Suitland Center for the Arts, that said they needed a teacher. They needed a graphic arts and art history teacher, and would you be interested? And I did what any person did when graduating from college and saying, oh, my goodness, I've got to pay bills, and how do I survive, and where are the jobs? I took the first job that came to me, which in this case was teaching high school.
There used to be an old joke at Maryland Institute back in the 60s and 70s that they graduated the most cab drivers.
Absolutely. By the 80s and 90s, that joke was that they graduated the most pizza delivery.
I see how things evolve.
Yes, absolutely. It's still driving. Still a lot of driving in the city.
So you were a teacher
in
Suitland.
Taught high school.
Tell us a little bit about that.
That was a nightmare.
Is that a baptism of fire?
It was a baptism of fire, quite literally in some circumstances. PG County and Suitland especially has evolved into – it's become a very violent area. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of non-fond memories with my first physical altercations there and then going back and being a teacher in a place that I had fallen afoul of. All sorts of nastiness.
Well, we won't go into detail.
Yeah, that's fine.
So what happened after that, after your teaching career?
Well, after I decided that teaching wasn't for me, and I think, frankly, I was just too young at the time. I mean, my students were just a couple years younger than me, and I hung in there for a while, but then decided that I needed to relax into other things. I decided to get something dead-endy that I would eventually get sick of but would probably, you know, keep me satisfied for the moment. Mm-hmm. I went to Borders Books, and I applied for a job there. Bought and sold, or and just sold books there, and shelved and shelved happily. I shelved the children's books, and I shelved the arts books.
We're comrades. Really? I used to work at Borders Music.
Excellent, excellent.
Up in Towson in the mid early 90s, I worked for a while when it first opened.
Cool.
That was it was nice. It was a semi-nightmare, though. Sometimes it was, I mean, I loved music, so I always wanted to be in there, and they pretended that you were experts in world music and
absolutely,
stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I used to have people come in that were just, ugh. My favorite was this woman who came in and asked me, "Do you have any music that my husband would like?" That was it.
I'm looking for the book.
Yeah,
you had it up front. It was blue.
I would send her some klezmer music or something like that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, one of my favorites was a bewildered family that wandered up to the information desk, and they're all looking in their different directions like some five-headed animal. And the father comes up to me very angrily and says, "I thought this was a Borders." And I was like, "Well, yes, Borders books, books and music." He said, "Well, where are the Borders?" They thought they had looked this up in the Yellow Pages and decided that they were going to come and buy some home furnishings and edging and trim for their home.
Oh.
And were quite stunned. The kids went nuts like they'd never been in a bookstore before. Like, possibly
probably
they
had.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Borders books after being a teacher. And how did that form your artistic endeavors?
Well, I think Borders Books does what a lot of those sort of pause jobs do for artistic, for anybody. You sort of need a chance to catch your breath. You realized you were going in the wrong direction. And this was a great holding opportunity for me. There was a lot of input there. There was a chance to meet a lot of people. I'd never worked a retail job before. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of satisfaction there. You're like, oh, it's a very simple, straightforward satisfaction. You get told what to do. And at least once a day, someone comes in looking for something specific and you can find it for them. And that's a small triumph. But while I was there, I was continuing to paint specifically. And I did a small show of my paintings at the coffee shop in the Borders. And
very good.
By total coincidence, that brought me to the attention of someone who was doing tech writing for an international, but locally based tech company at the time called Orbcom, powered by Pro4, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And she was looking for a graphic designer. And she came up to me, and the boss of the company came up to me and said, "We really like your visual aesthetic. Can you come work for us? We need a user interface designer. We need someone who can design tech manuals of all things." I don't know what my painting spoke to them of tech manuals, but, you know, okay, fine. I was like, well, I don't know any of that stuff. There's no way I know the very rudimentaries of web design. And they said, "We will teach you. We will send you to classes. We don't care. The thing we can't teach you is that visual aesthetic."
They must have been very impressed then with the show.
I ain't no slouch.
I'm just reiterating that for people who are listening to this whose English is their second language.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was a total coincidence. It was a total wonderful thing to stumble into.
Mm-hmm.
And what a cool job. I went forth and did user interface design. This blossomed into something where we were selling our products to we got picked up by Fujitsu. Eventually I did the intranet for Toyota. If the CEO of Toyota in the early 2000s was looking to see what ball bearings they were using in their cars, they pressed a button that I had designed, and that was really exciting and really cool.
So where were you based?
I was living in Kensington, I think, at the time, uh-huh. But we were based out of Herndon, Virginia. And so that was a stupid commute, but it was well worth it. There ain't nothing quite like IT and corporate work to make the bills seem a little bit lighter. But as I fell into that, I started getting a steady paycheck there, I decided that I was going to give myself about a 2-year period to fine hone my music now.
Mm-hmm.
With the idea that while I was young and while I was free, you know, I didn't have a big mortgage or kids or anything weighing me down. I wanted to go try doing something that we'd talked about in college, go on a year-long road trip and play music, see what became of us. So I put that program into play, I guess, in 2001. And by September of 2003, to the date, September 2nd, 2003, we had put the plan into place September 2nd, 2001. 2 years later, we had what gear we wanted, we had what repertoire we wanted, and we set out on the road for a year.
Heather Lloyd is in there somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere in there, I guess between 2000 and 2001, somewhere in there, maybe a little bit later. She's the one who has the memory for all the dates.
Mm-hmm.
I had parted ways with Audrey, who's mentioned in that bio.
Right.
And I was looking for another female voice that would pair well with mine. And I stumbled across Heather at an open mic in College Park, Maryland, at a place called Java Head, I think, that does not exist anymore and only existed for like a hot second. I am convinced that the only reason it appeared was like a magic shop in the middle of a,
you know,
it was just for me. It appeared there to deposit Heather Lloyd in my life and move on. And we got to talking about music and jamming a little bit. And there was a song that sort of goes something, the lyrics are really fast. They're really rapid fire. The rats all mutter in the gutter and the sewer and the wash as they rat race home as a beast of burden. I can carry your weight. Maybe you can help me home. And Heather was able to spit that back at me in harmony after hearing it once or twice. And that blew my mind. And
your heart grew three sizes that day.
My heart grew three sizes that day, and the world exploded in rainbows, and it was awesome.
Little Disney characters came out.
Absolutely. Little bluebirds came around. I flicked one off my shoulder, but the other ones kept me down.
And the ASPCA came out.
Exactly. And so, yeah, Heather and I formed up, and we've been together ever since performing music. It's been stunning. It's been absolutely stunning.
Very good.
Yeah.
So let's explore a little bit of the open mic scene. How did you, you just talked about it, but how did you get into it?
So how I got into it, I think it's slowly formed up in my brain recently as to why I'm doing it. You mentioned it in the bio again, the Library of Congress had asked me to come and talk about open mics and their influence on a music scene and their influence on American folk music in coffee houses specifically. And that's another very serendipitous situation. It happened to be that there were people who worked at the Library of Congress that were coming to my open mics. And when something came up that matched up with something they thought I could do, they invited me to come to the Library of Congress and talk about it. Whenever you're asked in a very, very fancy building to talk about what you do, I think it is in our nature to reexamine what we are doing and why we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something that has been maybe clarified, I guess, in the last couple months as I've been thinking about it for the Library of Congress appearance. I stumbled into open mics. It was something that was very important in college. It was something that Audrey was running as the college coffee house. It was where I first got exposed to live music. Beyond that, over the years, it was the way I met people. It was the way I had stumbled into a really cool scene, where whether in Baltimore or down in College Park, whatever. And then as we went on the road, they became a very integral part of, hey, we managed to book Thursday night, we booked Friday night, we booked Saturday night, we booked a gig on Wednesday night. What are we going to do for the rest of the week? Oh, we'll go play open mics. It's a great way to keep your craft honed. It's a great way to try out new material. And more importantly for us, when we were on the road, it's a great way to meet new people and edge your way into scenes. So like I said, we had said, oh, we're going to do this for a year. Well, September 2004 rolls around and Heather and I look at each other, you know, that's going pretty well. We should do it for another year. And 2005 rolls around, and we renew for another year. And 2006 rolls around, 2007 rolls around. It's not until 2008 that we settle down and decide that we don't really want to live out of our car anymore. But one of the first things that occurs to me is that's 5 years of not being in Maryland, of not being part of a community, of not having a scene of your own.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized that as we came back to Maryland, we didn't have shows, we didn't have friends, we didn't have that community. We had the band that had sort of loosely been kept together over this time, but really there was very little to come home to.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first open mic at wherever it was in Reisterstown, Maryland, this little coffee house that my brain is blanking on at the moment. Wonderful little place. We were invited to come, or I was invited to come in and run an open mic there. And it was the first step in drawing people back in towards us, in going from two guys that visited a town for a week and then moved on, and maybe we'll see you again in 6 months, to being somebody that you saw every week and became an integral part of drawing people together. And I think over the initial point of putting an open mic there at Java Mama's, it had been drawing from a couple of very interesting and very disparate communities. One was the high school and the middle school that were just down the street, so we got our school kids. One was just a very disenfranchised local arts community, I guess. They didn't have any other place to be. And then also we had, unbeknownst to me at the time, an AA meeting that was happening in the back room on the same night that we were doing open mic. And one of the interesting things about AA meetings is you got a lot of musicians in there. And not because musicians are any more prone to their alcoholisms, but it's because of that environment. And you'll find a lot of AA members being musicians that thought they couldn't play anymore. And the reason they couldn't play anymore is because the only place you can play is in a bar, right? Mm. And how can you be in a bar without having a drink, right?
All right.
And so I started drawing in these guys that hadn't been playing for 5 or 10 years, reawakening their guitar and reawakening that artistic spirit to get a little fuzzy at them, you know?
Yeah. Sure.
And so that mixer of older musicians and brand new musicians and poets from across the street, middle school, and became a really, really special community. I fell into it the first time. And then as Java Mamas went out of business and I started deciding that I wanted to create this sort of thing in other areas or other locations, figuring out ways to draw people in from disparate communities and figuring out how to knit them together became a very focused mission of mine. The Java Mamas thing especially was on the edge of a town that the Washington Post had touted as one of the most racist communities in the country.
Mm.
I think they were totally out on a limb declaring that. Yeah. Having toured all around the country, I think it was some author or some journalist sort of like throwing something out there to be hot-headed.
Somebody with an issue.
Yeah. But on the other hand, here I was touting an open mic or touting a community that drew in the little club kid and the black kid from across the street who wanted to do his gangster rap and the 60-year-old white musician who has never been in a room with a black kid in his life. You know, we were bringing that all together and creating a really powerful community out of it and realizing that became very, very important to people. As I moved on with the open mic scene, and this is something that you only see at very particular places, we're very lucky in where we are, and that we draw influences and cultural influences, musical influences from all sorts of different backgrounds here in the Baltimore, D.C. metropolitan area, purposefully knitting those things together and purposefully creating an environment that's friendly to all that has become very core to what I've been doing over the last, 2008, so maybe like the last 6 years now.
Yeah.
And that's what I talked about at the Library of Congress very purposefully, the idea that where else is the 60-year-old, possibly racist country rocker going to come together with the little black hip-hop rocker, with the gay club kid who doesn't understand that the 80-year-old ukulele player who went and fought for equal rights in the 60s sort of really, really relates to little club kid's desire to get married to his partner sometime soon. You know, it's a very powerful gestalt. There's very little other place that people are mixing like that.
Well, you got a microcosm of almost every social issue you can think of.
Absolutely. And equalizing it.
Yeah.
You know, I think very easily people are saying, oh, well, you don't have to represent X, Y, or Z because they're only 10%, 12%, 5%, 20%. Giving them all an equal voice and humanizing them through their music and poetry or whatever they bring to an open mic is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, and bringing out their talent.
Mm-hmm. And now we're webcasting that, so we're not limited to our little environment. We're putting that into people's homes, wherever they choose to tune in.
Mm-hmm.
It's become a really powerful, a very powerful thing.
So tell us about the places that you do the open mic now.
Well, I'm down to two of them at the moment, which is sort of a shame. On the other hand, my plate is full. On Monday nights, I run, and this is my pet, my home, I think, really. I've fallen in with Sonny and Mondell, who are the owners of a wonderful place called the T-Volve Cafe and Lounge in Harbor East, which has got to be just a mile from here,
right,
where we are sitting now in Baltimore, Maryland.
In Fells Point.
And it's a new venue. It's an artsy tea house sort of thing. They serve alcohol. They serve really great burgers, and they sell wonderful kale salads and whatever else. It's a beautiful big room. And when Sunny and her husband had put this place together, they had really, really hoped to have an arts space.
Mm-hmm.
And as I think almost any business person does, a small business person does, as this evolved, they realized that they had a lot on their plates just keeping their heads above water.
Sure.
And so over time, they sort of lost being able to get music and arts in there.
Mm-hmm.
I am running their open mic there. And over time, they said, oh, well, you've got enthusiasm for this. Let's have him book the music. I'm doing a lot of the arts outreach there.
How did you get connected with them?
My friend Acacia Sears, who was another singer-songwriter, had been running the open mic there for quite some time. And then when she felt it was time to step down, she really liked what I'd been doing with Java Mamas and a couple of other venues, and offered the position to me. And so that was a little over a year now. Gosh, I think I've gotten a little bit off track. That's
okay.
The way I roll.
All right.
So Acacia had hooked me up with the job there.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, this has evolved into being sort of more their overall arts coordinator and talent buyer. And so TVolve has evolved from being just a place that had music every once in a while to being something where they're really supportive of the artists, really supportive of the musicians that come through, not just on their Monday night open mic, but I get to book their Saturday music and things like that. And this has become a real home for me, and it's slowly capitalized more and more of my time. Mm-hmm. So I've sort of dropped a couple of other things that I was doing. I was running a place up, Tracks on Wax, where that's a wonderful record shop in Catonsville, Maryland.
They had that's been around forever.
I know. Well, you know, they got a little stage in the back.
Oh, do they?
So for a long time, I was doing their open mic there on whatever Tuesdays, I think it was. And you could bring in your amplifiers, you could bring in your drum kits. It wasn't a residential area. You could really go nuts. It was a lot of fun. Oh. But always cramped spaces. So that's one of the things I've had to sacrifice as I've focused on TVolve.
You don't bring your Marshalls in there.
Oh, you want to bring Marshalls in? Oh, man.
Just your little Vox.
But the other community that I've been spinning has been actually centered more around the House of Musical Traditions, mm-hmm. down in Tacoma Park. Tacoma Park is a very interesting, artsy kind of community right on the edge of D.C., Washington, D.C., and it's technically a people's republic. It's not even a town or something like that. I don't know what the technicalities behind that. But the People's Republic of Tacoma Park has a wonderful community of artists and musicians, but they don't have any art spaces or music places to play. Yeah. They've got a place to go buy musical instruments. It's actually sort of like Catonsville that way. You've got tons of places to go buy your stuff, but you don't have a place to go and output your creativity.
So they do now.
I was first working with a place called Capital City Cheesecake and House of Musical Traditions, helped bankroll the initial couple of open mics, and then Capital City took it over, and this was the Tacoma Park open mic, and we brought together, again, this sort of very diverse cross-cultural community of performers, whether it's interesting sitar players or six-year-old kids bringing their songs, or again that 81-year-old ukulele player, or lots of accordions, all sorts of really wonderful things. DC is such a crazy cross-cultural thing. It doesn't have the grunge that Baltimore has, mm-hmm. but it's a different entity. And so we put together this open mic focusing on Tacoma Park, and it was a little bit earlier in time, so it was a little more kid-friendly. Now Capital City had signed on for a year, and then the year went by, and they were like, we're going to put an ice cream bar there as opposed to where the performances are. Yeah. But other businesses have taken up the slack, and right now I'm running they have a Sunday night open mic at a place called Republic in Tacoma Park, brand new bar, and that's been a lot of fun. It's drawn on a lot of the same community influences. But I think TVolve has been the one that's closest mm-hmm. to my heart, because, I mean, it's close to home, and it's where I imagine the artists to be glowing here in Baltimore City. It's such a charm city, such a powerful place.
Now talk a little bit about your music. Tell us about the style, what you like to do, and all that kind of good stuff.
I'm a rock star. Let's be clear about
that. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Thank you very much. I didn't mean to mean you, but you know, I have been drawn
into the folk scene, and Heather is a folk star, and I've drawn her into the rock scene, and there's this really wonderful confluence of influences and styles that I think comes from the full five-piece act. The five of us come from very disparate things. Heather comes out of folk and R&B. I come out of heavy metal and maybe new metal, like the old where Cypress Hill and Rage Against the Machine crossed paths, and grunge rock, and Kristen, our cellist, comes out of a classical background. Sharif, I don't even know what Sharif, he has a piano player, he comes out of all sorts of stuff. And then Rowan Corbett, who is our percussionist, who just got swiped by the Carolina Chocolate Drops. We have visitation rights.
Is there any kind of bitterness or anything?
Oh, not at all, actually. It's so stunning what he's able to do. We just got to see him at the 9:30 Club with the Carolina Chocolate Drops. Oh, my goodness, what a show. Mm. And now that his schedule is sort of stabilizing, you know, he just joined the band in December. We didn't quite know what was going to happen. We were guessing we were getting him for X amount of time. We weren't sure how it's going to work out. But it's stabilizing now. We've got him for a good couple of gigs over the summer.
Excellent.
So Rowan comes out of traditional Irish music in a lot of ways. He wandered with the Renaissance festivals for a long time. Mm-hmm. Crazy Irish bones player, bazookies, whatever else. So the five of us are bringing these very disparate influences coming together. I guess one could make the case for kind of some long drawn out metaphor about how Iliamie is just like the open mics and drawing from whatever. Anyways, so what we do as a five piece act is kind of this very percussive rock, folk, acoustic centric. We call it acoustic grunge, but whatever.
It's all original music?
It's mostly original music. I mean, we do covers here and there, but we really change up the covers. We have a good time with them. It's singer songwriter centric, and it definitely has folk roots, but we draw from a lot of different influences.
Well, we'll have to record you sometime.
I think so.
The show. Because this is an introduction, and we want to talk about open mic all the way down the road, you know, on a continuous basis. And, you know, maybe I'll go down there, record something, and what have you.
Cool. But I webcast from there, too. You can just. We can couple our forces.
Sounds like a plan to me, because I really want to open up the Baltimore art scene, the Baltimore music scene, to worldwide. I said to record everything right now, but I'm going to go into live, so I'm doing live shows. So
very cool.
We'll be able to have a forum of musicians worldwide, is what my hope is down the road a bit. But, you know, we're starting off, so it'll be a bit before we get to that, but that's going to happen.
Live broadcasting is a lot of fun.
Well, you've got a great voice radio.
Well, thank you. I dressed up special for it, too.
You did. I can see that. Yeah, it's
very, you never know. Sometimes they're like...
Radio clothes horse you are.
Every once in a while, you show up at one of these radio interviews, and they point this webcam at you, and you're like, well, I dressed for radio. Oh, God. Yeah. And they're like, wait, no, don't worry about it. It's high def. And you're like, oh, God, I don't think I even slept 2 hours last night.
They can see your pores.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. This has been just a charming thing to get to meet you and see what you're doing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And thank you for coming on. I've been talking to musician Rob Hinkle, who conducts several open mic nights at Tacoma Park and Baltimore. See, I can mess
there
up there. On Monday nights, and we'll give you all the information about that. Actually, you can give us the contact information, and then when you'll see this on the Baltimore Internet Radio website, you'll be able to click in and directly to it, link it right to it. We'll give the Spaces website, too.
Excellent.
That would be great. So give us some contact information. I'm just stumbling around here.
Yeah, certainly. You can reach me through my website at liamy.com, and let me spell that for you. It's liamy.com. You know you get it right. It stands for I Love You and I Miss You. Iliamy.com. You can reach me at rob@iliamy.com. You can search Iliamy on Facebook and you'll drag me down that way. Any of the social media platforms, you plug Iliamy and you'll get me. As for the open mics, if you go to iliamy.com and click on community, you'll see a link to Rob's open mics. Or if you plug Rob's open mics into Facebook, you'll track me down that way. I'll be the one that's not in Michigan or the UK.
I'm glad you made that clear.
Yeah. And then here in Baltimore, I run every Monday night at T-Volve in Baltimore, Maryland.
Where is that located?
That's the street? 1401 Alisana.
Okay.
In Harbor East. You'll know you're in the right place because diagonally across from you, they're baking what is usually the most delicious smelling bread I've ever encountered.
Oh, right.
And Monday night is often cinnamon raisin night.
Oh, raisin. I was going to say raisin.
It's kind of amazing. You go say, where did I leave my car? It smells great out here. Forget the car. I'm just going to hang out.
Well, must be great for that because they serve food there too. Mm-hmm, so you're walking in smelling
walk
the bread
in hungry.
And say, boy, I think maybe I wasn't going to get something to eat, but you know, maybe now.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place. It's one of the only places where you can find white tea sangria.
Mm.
It's kind of stunning. So, yeah, T-Volve is my home venue right now. I think their website is just tvolve.com, but again, you can find it through me. And then Republic down in Tacoma Park. You search Republic in Tacoma. And Tacoma on our coast is T-A-K-O-M-A Park.
Right.
And track it down that way, and that's on Sunday nights.
Thanks for being here at Baltimore Internet Radio, Rob. And I've been talking to Rob Hinkle, musician and also open mic entrepreneur for Baltimore and Tacoma Park. And we'll have him back because I want to hear his music and I want to thank him again. You've been listening to Baltimore Internet Radio, our music, arts, and whatever it is department. And I'm your host, Dave Custy. Thank you.